scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, in left corner to Aginla. Aginla left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aginla, rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, happy Monday. Let's get it going for another week of Flames Talk in August. It's Monday, August 19th. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson. It's the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo Smart Lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts, and of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Good, man. Welcome back to Flames Talk.
Wow. I was walking in. I was like, you know, played some golf this morning. 30 degrees outside.
Maybe I'll give my buddy a little
talk. Yeah, we should talk some hockey.
Might as well.
Some hockey.
You know, it's actually turned out to be a fairly busy last couple of days in the NHL. If you go all the way back to last week when the Blues kind of shocked the hockey world by offering those two or signing those two offer sheets with Broberg and Holloway of the Oilers, it's turned into a pretty busy week. Or last week or so. Since then, the Oilers have made two trades in response. They acquired Podkolzin from Vancouver on Sunday, and then Sunday night, they moved out Cody Ceci along with a third-round pick to San Jose, which I think presumably helps them to match the Broberg offer sheet when it's all said and done. And now on this Monday, Patrick Laine is no longer a member of the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's been moved to the Montreal Canadiens along with a second-round pick in exchange for defenseman Jordan Harris. No salary retention on Laine, so the full 8.7 for the next 2 years being absorbed by Montreal. They get a second-round pick in return. And you know what all of these deals have in common, or at least the last three, because I think Podkolzin does with its relation to the offer sheets as well. They're all somewhat cap motivated. They're all financially motivated moves. Columbus wanted to get Laine's money off the books. Edmonton having to get something off the books when it comes to their cap situation, and presumably not going to match Holloway. So they've brought in some sort of contingency when it comes to Podkolzin. So that's three moves in a span of about 24 hours that were all cap motivated.
And buddy, you'd be pretty hard pressed this summer, or you know, in this sort of, let's call it today in general, to find many moves. Like most trades now are cap motivated in some way. Are they not?
Yes. I mean, yeah, there's less and less straight up hockey trades.
Yeah.
These days, right?
And even, you know, I'd consider the Laine Harris swap a hockey trade in some respects, but with some pretty hard cap undercurrents or maybe overcurrents in this case. And so let's just start there. Are you thinking Broberg match Holloway goes?
Yeah. That's what the, if I were to be a professional reader of tea leaves, that's what my guess would be, that they match on Broberg by moving all of through the 3.5 or whatever it was on CC's cap hit to San Jose, knowing they're probably going to LTIR Kane to start the year, gives them the flexibility to be able to match on Broberg without being too tied up against the cap. And this is you never want to just trade away a 22-year-old first-round pick for a third-rounder. But in the long run, the Oilers are going to be able to absorb saying goodbye to Holloway more so than they're going to be able to say goodbye to Broberg. So that's kind of my feeling as to what we're going to see. We'll see if that's the way it ends up as that deadline starts to loom pretty close. But it feels like that's how things are shaping up.
I think that is accurate, that that's the way the tea leaves are hinting, and yet part of me still wonders if they now match both. And I've been thinking, you know, until they made the CC trade last night, I was sort of leaning towards match Holloway, don't match Broberg. I could see a scenario where they keep both guys.
I could too.
Now it's,
it just seems like you don't go get a Podkolzin unless you're kind of planning on Holloway walking, kind of seems like the way I'm thinking about it. But I believe from a cap perspective, they'd be able to do it right now because you can be 10% over the cap during the offseason. So they'd be able to do it, but by matching both, even with the CC trade, it would put them in a more precarious situation down the line.
And tomorrow morning's the deadline.
Yes, Tuesday morning. Yeah.
Woo! It's been a fun week, hasn't it?
So all of that is to say, as Montreal helps Columbus out a little bit and helps themselves, San Jose did Edmonton a favor, but helps themselves by getting a third-round pick and probably another pick if they flip CC at the deadline, which you could absolutely see them doing.
Yeah. Can we stop there for a second? Did San Jose get enough to do that favor?
I think they did just fine.
Okay.
I know others disagree, and that's also fine. I just think if you're the Sharks, you don't care what the Oilers, like, you don't care that you're helping the Oilers. Mm-hmm. San Jose is 3-4 years down the road, what they're thinking. And so to accumulate another pick and an asset that they can flip for even more in a number of months' time, if you're Mike Grier, you're like, yeah, sign me up for this. I don't care that I'm helping the Oilers. You're not worried about what the Oilers are doing for the next 2-3 years. You're worried about your build, and you're worried about your long-term future. So if you can jump the queue and get out in front of other teams who might have been willing to help the Oilers out, well, might as well do it. So I actually thought it was a pretty savvy move from Grier and the Sharks.
Yeah, yeah.
It just so happens that it helped the Oilers out.
And I suppose, you know, like you said, if you can flip that player at the deadline for a second, maybe it's another third, whatever that looks like, then you're doubling your assets. It just, for how up the creek without a paddle the Oilers seem to be, and it's easy for me to say, you know, I don't know what the offers were. I don't know if Edmonton basically said, you know what, if this isn't good enough on CC, we'll just let Broberg walk and we'll take the second round pick. I don't know what all that haggling behind the scenes looked like, but I guess when I saw the CC trade drop last night, my initial reaction was, that doesn't seem like quite enough for the type of favor that they're doing them here.
And I know you're not the only one who felt that way.
Yeah, for sure. And you're not the only one that felt the other way. I do think, and I haven't spent a ton of time on social media kind of looking at all the react, but it felt pretty split to me last night. Is that a fair way to...
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So the question then becomes...
This is the part of Flames talk where we get to the Flames?
Yeah.
Okay.
Should the Flames have been involved in these financially motivated conversations? Like, should they have been involved in potentially bringing in Laine? They've got over $19 million in cap space. Should they have thought about, well, if the second round pick and Laine, let's think about doing it. Or helping, I mean, I think maybe not on the Oilers front. Maybe you don't help the Oilers in taking CC. But I guess what's really interesting to me is less about whether or not they should have been involved in these specific deals, which you can have your opinion on and we can get into. But I'm just really curious, because they have that $19+ million of cap space, what they potentially do with it here going forward. As we move into the season, as we move towards this year's trade deadline, how much can that $19 million become an asset for Calgary and Craig Conroy to try to make their team better and try to help their future build here?
Yeah, and the sort of transaction that was made last night between Edmonton and San Jose, with Cody Ceci going one way and essentially a straight salary dump, draft pick as the sweetener, like, that's the sort of deal that I think Craig Conroy would love to make. He just couldn't be the guy offering a life raft to the Edmonton Oilers. It was never going to be for CC. It was never going to be for Brett Kulak. It certainly was never going to be that harebrained Rasmus Anderson to the Oilers trade rumor that seemed to be floating around social media for a few minutes last week. Like, the Oilers needed help, and it couldn't be coming from Craig Conroy. Mm-hmm. And yet, that sort of deal, I think, is what the Calgary Flames should be looking at. You send us a serviceable player and a sweetener, we'll take on the contract.
Well, And it's something that Craig Conroy's been on record about saying they'd be open to. So this was back in late June. This was on the draft floor at the Sphere in Las Vegas, And this is right after the second day of the draft. Craig Conroy, who at the time did not have a flight home. I asked him straight up.
Did you?
I did not. Well, I did. And then a few hours later, it would get canceled. This was Craig Conroy when I asked him about doing just that. Are you willing to use your cap space as a bit of a weapon?
How open would your group be to, you know, taking back a quote-unquote bad contract, that whole idea of weaponizing your cap space? Is that something your group is open to?
Yes, we absolutely are. I mean, you know, you talk to teams if you need, you know, if you want to go in one direction and you need some help, you know, for a fee, you know, something coming back to us, you know, we'd be open to it. You know, and you know, I've kind of said I don't think a 3 or 5 or 6 year deal, but if it was a couple years, you know, and the price was right, you know, kind of similar to what Monahan, you know, Monahan moved out, they got a first, or those are the type of things we're open to. You know, is it going to happen? I don't know. You know, that's, but we put it out there, and if somebody is in cap trouble and they need some help, we're gonna, you know, definitely look at everything.
You'll help them out for a price.
Yeah, for a price. Yeah, don't mind doing it, but it's got to make sense, and there's got to be the right price coming back.
I like how he was, for a fee. You can almost see him like the Vito Corleone there, like that, for a fee.
Make
him an offer he don't refuse. So that was late June. Then a couple of weeks later, you spoke to Craig at development camp. This was the day that they signed Moran and Parekh and Gridden to their entry-level deals. And similar thing, you asked him about kind of what the market is showing. This was after July 1st, so he'd already made his signings in free agency. And again, this is where the general manager was.
There's going to be some teams I know right now, they're not really in cap trouble, but there might be in cap trouble. So you just want to be patient and see what shakes loose. You want to have flexibility, and instead of just signing, you want to leave some space and see if something makes sense. So, you know, we would only do it if it made sense for us moving forward to help the club.
So there's two instances of the general manager saying yes, absolutely. If it makes sense for us, if it's a type of player that kind of similar to Kuzmenko, that they feel like, hey, you know what? This guy could help us for a period of time. We're happy to have him on the roster, and we're also happy to take him back for financial reasons. In the case of Kuzmenko, to help a deal go through.
Right.
In the case of other guys, maybe that's the focal point of a deal. Fact of the matter is, I think the Flames are open for business when it comes to that type of transaction. Now, I don't think this summer they're feeling like it's the time to do so. I feel like Conroy's group and the rest of this hockey ops staff kind of had a vision and a plan. They've executed a lot of things as per that vision, and now they want to see it play out. They feel like they've accomplished what they've wanted to accomplish this summer, and now they want to see what the results are at camp and in the regular season. So, you know, the Line A move, that would have been a big upheaval, and you would have been bringing another forward in, which would have made it even more difficult for a Pelche or a Coronado or whoever the case may be to get NHL playing time. So maybe that one didn't make as much sense.
Right.
And obviously helping the Oilers with CeCe, yeah, maybe that doesn't make any sense because of who the other team is. But come February or come December, if there's something that happens and all of a sudden you can kind of broker something to help another team's cap situation.
Sure.
I think the Flames will be and fully should be open to doing that.
Yeah, and I love the way you're looking at it when you talk about December or February, because I think, especially in sort of the era of, you know, instantaneous social media reaction from fan bases, whenever something happens, it's, oh, geez, well, That's an interesting package for CeCe. Why wasn't Conroy in on that? Why wasn't Conroy in on maybe an offer sheet to a guy like Holloway? And hey, that's perfectly fine. That, you know, that instant reaction is always how does this impact my favorite team? And that's the reason we have shows like this, and that's the reason I can write about the Flames for a living. But I love, and I've said this so many times, I think Craig Conroy's greatest strength or most impressive component so far as a general manager has been his patience. Mm-hmm. And I do think the Calgary Flames are willing to take on a bad contract for a sweetener. We've heard Craig Conroy say it himself several times, but you're not taking on a bunch of them, right? You might take on one or two, both because you have to actually put the player on your roster, because you have to actually pay the salary. That's somebody's real money. Mm-hmm. And so I like the patience because, yeah, I was pretty underwhelmed by a third round pick for Cody Ceci. But if a team is strapped going 1 or 2 months into the trade deadline and they're looking to clear some room, guess how many teams are going to have room to play with? Not very many, right? Nope. That's something that we've seen over and over again, is the number of teams that are basically sitting at the ceiling for most of the season. It's why LTIR is one of hockey's most noteworthy acronyms these days. Everyone knows what it is. Yeah. Everyone knows why you're using it for cap purposes. And so if you can, I guess, if you can send the message that Craig Conroy mentioned in those two clips, and that he's certainly told every other GM in the league, that, hey, when you need to park that contract, we're here to talk about it. I do think into the winter, there's a chance to really maximize that, to really, as we put it, weaponize that cap space.
And I just, so this is just off the top of my head, I'm thinking about teams that have got contracts like, oh, that can be a little cumbersome. Like, what if the Dallas Stars, who now don't have Joe Pavelski, but like, what if the Stars are looking to do something big at the deadline, be like, geez, that 9.85 on Tyler Seguin, that, like, that is really hurting. That's
right.
And maybe Seguin's having a rough year. The Flames to take on 2.5 years of Seguin? Like, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Good in the room, can still play, but probably isn't a $9.85 million player anymore. And that could absolutely, and all you got, you're like, oh, for a fee, hey, like,
yeah.
Yeah, we'll take Seguin for sure, but you better throw a second round pick in return, and we're not giving up much in response. Like, those, that's just one that came to mind right away. And I'm not saying that Dallas would be doing that. I'm just saying other teams that you would put in the category of being competitive, who would also be up against the cap, who would be looking to make big moves at the deadline, you can easily go down that road if you're the Flames.
We saw it, and this isn't exactly the type of player, because he never played an NHL game on his next roster, but we saw it with Ryan Johansson too, right? That Colorado wants to take another run at it, and they're going to be in the exact same position this February and this March as well. It's like, look up and down, okay, what's our worst contract? Who are we, quote-unquote, wasting money on? Ryan Johansson. Okay, what's it going to take to move that out, right? They gave the Philadelphia Flyers, I'm just trying to think.
It was part of the Walker trade. There was a conditional first. They got up to a conditional first to bring in Sean Walker, and Johansson went back the other way too.
And so that's the type of player too. Again, you'd like someone who's more useful than Johansson proved to be in Philly. But those contenders, whether it's a guy like Seguin, whether it's a shorter term deal, whatever it looks like, or both shorter term or less money, like, there's teams that need to park salary, and they're going to need to park it worse in February and March than they do now.
Yep.
Now, if someone knocks on the door next week, you're absolutely listening, right? Like, you can make that sort of deal at any time. I just think the patience can really be an asset. I think the patience can really pay off for you here.
And I think it's something that the Flames will be very open to over the next couple of years, because cap-wise, they're not going to be cap crunched for quite some time. Again, more than $19 million free, and that's with a number of free agent signings on July 1st. That's with adding Lomberg and Mantha and all of what they brought in on July 1st. Jake Bean, so on and so forth. Like, they signed four guys on July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have more than $19 million to work with.
Yeah, like, we don't look at their roster and say, well, they need to fill this spot and they need to fill this spot before training camp. We're pretty comfortable with the idea that these are the Calgary Flames that you're going to see in mid-September.
Yep.
And so they're going to go into the season with all that cap space to play with.
Few texts. Adam writes, the Leafs traded a first for the Marleau contract to get that off the book.
Right.
That is absolutely the case.
Now, so, was that deal done in the summer? I'm trying to remember.
I feel like it was,
yeah.
If I remember correctly. It was an off-season deal, if I...
That's what I thought.
And sometimes you do them in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. No, that was... Actually, doesn't show here, but I believe that was an off-season trade.
Yeah.
This says, Connie's shown some good patience and will weaponize his cap space to the fullest. This reads, Seguin's not the type of player you want when you're rebuilding. I don't really want to get into the semantics on whether Seguin would be the right guy. I'm just saying there's an example of a guy, maybe it's Ben, maybe it's, I don't know, but there's an example of a contract that could be cumbersome for a team that is looking to make a significant move, is near the cap, and you're like, hey, we could really do a whole lot more if Seguin, who's playing on our third line and a little under $10 million, wasn't on our team anymore. And honestly, I think Tyler Seguin's turned into a pretty good locker room guy and a pretty good, like, I'd have no problem with that. Everything that I've heard about the guy, especially over the last number of years,
sure,
with how hard he's worked to come back from some of those injuries, I'd have no problem with it. But it's less about the player and more about the concept for me.
Yeah, not just to come back from the injuries, to come back from the not-so-strays that he took from
the owner,
from management at one point. I think the important thing to sort of remember is when you're making a cap motivated trade, when you're basically offering to take on a bad salary, you're not looking at it the same as every other trade where it's, how is this guy helping us? Mm-hmm. Now, you don't want to bring in a guy who's going to be a bad apple. You don't want to bring in a contract that's so long that when you do start to need to pay some of your young guys, you're thinking, oh, geez, why are we still paying X player $8 million for two more years? So you have to be careful in that regard. But I don't think you're looking at the whiteboard and saying, geez, okay, how's Tyler Seguin going to help us get back to the playoffs? It's more pick player A's name and how much are we going to get to take on that contract?
Yep. What's the asset that's going to be for us to tolerate this player on our cap type thing?
But we've seen these cap dumps in some cases, and in these cases, it's a bonus, turn into useful players, mm-hmm. right? Sean Monahan is the best example. The Calgary Flames, 11 times out of 10, must wish that they could go back and not do that trade, knowing now where the team was ultimately headed, knowing that they gave away a first-round pick, knowing that Sean Monahan had the kind of season that netted the team that took on the salary dump another asset, ultimately. And so, you know, those guys can prove to be useful players, but that's not necessarily the top priority. You're just looking for the sweetest sweetener.
Yep. Curious to see how they... use their copious amounts of cap space going forward.
We've seen San Jose do it twice this summer now, right? CC and Jake Wallman. Yep. And those are two guys that are going to play a role.
Yeah, they can play. They can play still, but they're just maybe not exactly where you'd like him to be contract-wise.
Listen, Cody Ceci could play on the Flames' blue line. It's just the city he was coming from. You couldn't be the one bailing the Oilers out of this mess.
I bet Connie would even... admit that publicly. I don't really want to help that team out.
Yeah. That sweetener would have had to be really, really sweet.
By the way, only one team in the National Hockey League has more cap space right now.
Anaheim?
Than the Flames. Yep. Flames are about 19.2. Anaheim at $21.7 million below the cap ceiling.
I'm trying to remember, does Anaheim have any significant RFAs left to sign?
A quick glance here, sir, tells me that...
still learning how to
do not.
Beyond cap friendly.
Nope, they're all good.
Don't get me wrong. Puckpedia, big fan, but...
It's just so... the amount of times that I just punch in cap friendly without even thinking that I'm going
to
get that just kick in the gut splash page that says, sorry, we don't exist anymore.
Yeah, too late.
Puckpedia has actually helped out quite a bit.
Yeah, very good. And gotten better in the last couple months.
Oh yeah, it's, yeah. They've
done some nice things.
As soon as that news about Cap Friendly going down, they really went into overdrive and building a new platform and turning it into more than it was. Kind of more of a information site. Now it's turned into kind of a all encompassing thing. This says getting all sorts of picks is great, but you better hit on a lot of them, or it could be a long rebuild. True.
Fair.
I think a lot of Flames fans were pretty encouraged by this last draft where the Flames, they went in with 9 and left with 10 selections because they had the one trade down. So 10 picks made in June. And whether it was Basha or the defensemen, like Flames fans were over the moon about most of the picks that were made. And some of the draft experts were hailing the Flames as like this team that was hitting all the value selections, right?
Well, and it's one of the primary appeals of taking on a bad salary and getting that sweetener pick is you're trying to get into the range where those draft picks aren't quite the roll of the dice that they are lower down, right? You know, you expect to hit on your first rounders, you hope to hit on your second and third rounders, and you kind of keep your fingers crossed for the rest of them. Yeah. That's a broad generalization, but you know, you expect to hit early, and then as you get deeper down, those players are not in the, let's say, top 100 prospects in their draft class for whatever given reason. Yeah. And so I think when you're talking about a sweetener, like, it's not a very big contract if all you're getting back is a fifth round pick.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, what's that fifth round pick other than another sort of roll of the dice? But if you can get a third or better yet a second or ideally a first to take on a contract, then you can really do something, right? Then you've got another card to play that you feel like has pretty good odds of working out.
It's Pat and Wes. We are underway on this Monday edition of Flames Talk, and we're coming at you on this Monday from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Monday edition of Flames Talk rolls on. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson. Happy Monday. So, had a chance to chat with Jake DeBrusque over the weekend. Calgary resident Jake DeBrusque. He was a part of the Rogers Legends of Hockey at the Rogers Charity Classic out at Canyon Meadows on Saturday. One of the many hockey superstars taking part. It was a who's who. Cujo, Darcy, Tucker, Grant Fuhr, Jaina Heffernan, Cassie Campbell, Megan Mickelson, Sarah Fillier, Laura Stacey, Braden Shen, Travis Konechny.
Yeah.
Like there were, I'm missing a bunch.
Dustin Wolf.
Ow. And Jake DeBrusque. DeBrusque was one of the names taking part. So I say Calgary resident tongue in cheek because that became a little bit of a story over the summer and the late spring. So if you remember leading up to free agency, there were all kinds of rumors and reports that Jake DeBrusque was going to sign with the Flames. The big reason why was because it had become known that Jake had bought a house in Calgary. And so it was like, well, what's he going to sign for? Is it going to be 4 years? Is it going to be 3 years? Is it going to be 5 years? And so when it's all said and done, he does not sign with the Flames. He signs a 7-year deal at $38.5 million with Vancouver, $5.5 million per. But definitely thought, as he sat down with me on Saturday, definitely thought it would be good to get his opinion on those rumors that he was going to sign with the Flames.
Can before you play this interview, can I just make an admission?
Of course.
I somehow totally missed the part about him moving to Calgary. I heard all the rumors about him signing in Calgary, but I had no idea that he had moved here, that had maybe sparked or added some fuel to the fire. I came outside to chat with you on Saturday, and you and Logo were talking about what a great interview you had with Jake DeBrusque. And I said, do you guys know he lives in Calgary? And I got the, like, three eyeballs look. Do we know he lives in Calgary? Turns out he lives in Calgary. Spoiler. Sorry, did I ruin it?
No.
Okay, good. Everyone else knew except me.
Here's another spoiler. He may or may not have been aware that people thought he was coming to the Flames.
He may.
Yeah, he definitely
he
did.
He may have. And this isn't a spoiler either. He won the Rogers Legends of Hockey event with Sarah Filliet.
Yeah.
The first overall pick in the PWHL draft this past year.
Here's our chat with Jake DeBrusk from Saturday on signing with the Canucks. How close maybe to the Flames and a whole lot more. It's a little bit of our chat with new Vancouver Canuck Jake DeBrusk.
Where is your summer mostly spent? And I know that you're switching teams, so you got a new team for this coming year, but where do you summer?
Yeah, honestly, this year I've actually been here. I moved here probably just before July 1st.
Okay.
Just for some family things, but normally usually in Edmonton, so I've gone back and forth between both those places so I can see my family. I kind of spent a couple days down in Edmonton, so only 3-hour drive, and then come back, which has been nice. Definitely been a different change, though, obviously.
Yeah.
Meeting different people, workouts, skates, all that good stuff. But I feel like I've been able to manage it pretty well, considering a busy summer.
I don't know if you knew this or not, but there were some people in this city who were aware that you had potentially bought a house here leading up to free agency. There was a little bit of a buzz. We can joke about it now because now you've signed in Vancouver. There was a little bit of a buzz in this city when you decided to buy a house here.
I know. I felt like there was lots of deliveries going on and at the place at the time, you know, couches, chairs, whatever, so forth. And everybody knew. They're like, oh, so you're coming to Calgary. And I was like, I haven't heard anything here. I can't give you much, but definitely had some funny conversations with good people, though. Everyone was really nice, but they wanted to see where I was at and everything like that. And then even just going to like pick up stuff from like the postal, like just different things. It seemed like even Best Buy, it was coming all at once. So yeah, I definitely felt that. But that's being from Alberta. You know, I'm from Edmonton. I understand that, and it was all excitement, and I took it as a compliment.
That's awesome. What made you choose Calgary for the off-season home?
Just my girlfriend. My girlfriend's doing a residency here now.
Okay.
And she'll be here for the next probably three years.
Okay.
So it was just one of those things where, you know, we don't get to spend much time together. She's obviously very busy throughout the year when I was gone to Boston that, you know, summers were big for us. And I thought, you know, I might as well just move in with her. Obviously, like I was saying earlier, being closer to home.
Yeah.
It was something new. You know, it was one of those things where it was definitely a different time for me now in my life than it was, I guess, a year ago. So just got to go head first into it. And I've been enjoying it, though. It's been a good summer.
Vancouver Canucks, tell us about the first summer of being a member of the Canucks and what's that what that's been like.
Yeah, like I was saying, it's been a lot of new firsts. Obviously, you know, guys reaching out, trying to get conversations and trying to put, you know, characters to faces and all that good stuff. And it's been different, obviously, you know, putting on the gear for the first time. Putting on the blue reminded me of when I was playing in Swift Current. That was the last time I had blue on.
And, yeah.
Obviously, definitely a different dynamic, but at the same time, exciting. I'm really, really pumped for it. And I think that, you know, obviously I'll feel more real once I go. I'm actually going there tonight. I'm looking at places tonight.
Oh, nice.
So I'm going there for the first time tonight. So that's, I think, will be pretty real for me in the sense, obviously, I know it's real, but it's a little bit different for me. I'm more of a visual guy.
Yeah. What made Vancouver the right choice for you in your first foray into unrestricted free agency?
Yeah, I think a lot of different things, honestly. I think that there's a lot of things to take into account, and obviously a very good team. You know, a team that took a good step last year, obviously going to the playoffs and getting to seven and that stuff. Their core is locked up. They have great centermen. Obviously, Quinn Hughes got a good goaltender. I just like their roster, how it's set up, and I thought that I would have good opportunity there. Was the first thing. And then second thing, you know, closer to home. I think being closer to home was big for me. You know, I know that was something that obviously, you know, in Boston it's hard to get to. It's a great city to come to, though, but it was hard to get to for my side of the family anyway. So
yeah.
I think it was one of those things that also came into it. And term, obviously the 7 years was a big thing for me. They made a huge commitment to me, and anytime that someone does that in our work of life, you take that deal.
Were you expecting term go? Like, were you expecting somebody to throw that type of term at you going into free agency?
I didn't know. I did not know. I had no idea how it was going to go. My year was kind of not necessarily what I wanted it to be. So I didn't know if it would be 7, 6, 5. You know, at that point, you hear so many different things.
Yeah.
You're talking different teams. There's
well, you were coming
things.
To Calgary, remember?
Yeah. The delivery guy that's coming to help me out with my couch or whatever is talking to me an hour about how the Flames are going to be, you know. No, I'm just playing. But, you know, there's lots of things to consider. So at that point, it's not necessarily about term, money, whatever. It's more so about fit and everything. You got to, you know, I was lucky enough where I had lots of great offers and lots of different types of things going on, but Vancouver pulled away and made a pretty obvious decision for me, and I couldn't be more excited.
Been a decade almost in the Bruins organization. What was unrestricted free agency like for the first time? Was it, because having never been in that situation before, I would imagine there would be times when it might be a little overwhelming.
It is overwhelming. You try to write notes down, you try to write down different things. Obviously you're on the phone pretty much every second day, or trying to get more updates. It's funny because as soon as the first kind of offer, you know, comes in, even if it's not something you like, you instantly get hooked. It's like you're fishing. You're like, okay, like, you know, and then you think about different things. You look at salary caps, you look at their future, you look at all these different types of things. So you have a little bit of time, but at the same time, it's pretty fast and it can get overwhelming. But I've always really liked that kind of stuff just in general growing up. I've always liked free agency. You know, when living in Edmonton, was always hoping that the Oilers would sign the best guy available. But it was exciting at the same time. And obviously when this offer came in, it makes you kind of a little bit more at ease having that. But in saying that, there's lots of different scenarios that could have happened. It was something that I didn't initially want to have happen. I didn't initially want to go to free agency. But at the same time, I tried to hit all avenues I could.
How do you look back on almost 10 years in a hockey town like Boston?
Yeah, no, I was honestly very lucky. I think that being drafted there and just obviously playing there for it feels like forever. You're making me feel old, man. You know, I guess I'm getting to that time.
You're 27
years
old.
Yeah, I guess I'm getting to that time in my career where it's almost in the cusp. No, honestly, a lot of great memories there. Some highs, some lows. I think I learned a lot as a player. Obviously, I grew there, but as a person as well. You know, lots of adversity and, you know, going through there, the COVID year and everything.
Yeah.
And just the city itself. How amazing they were to me. I couldn't say enough good things about Boston, honestly. If you've never gone, I'd always suggest going, especially if you're a sports fan. You got, you know, one of the four major teams that you can watch. But it was something that I wanted, obviously, to finish off on a different level. You know, I think that 2019 obviously stands out. But in saying that, I was really lucky with my time there.
It's Jake DeBrusk. He stopped by with us on Saturday at the Rogers Legends of Hockey event, all part of the Rogers Charity Classic at Canyon Meadows. He ends up signing a 7-year deal with the Vancouver Canucks, 7 times 5.5. He joked about it and was well aware that a lot of people thought he was going to sign in Calgary. And maybe it would have made sense if there was a 4-year deal on the table. And the Flames and DeBrusk agreed to 4 times 5.5. I think we would have been sitting there on Canada Day saying, yeah, okay, I can understand why they did that. 27-year-old helps him for a little while here, not super long term. But the Flames weren't putting 7 on the table for anybody. And Craig Conroy was very adamant about that leading into free agency. There's no 6, 7, 8 year deals. Well, definitely not 8 year deals, but no 6, 7 year deals on the table in unrestricted free agency. It wouldn't have made sense for the Flames to do what Vancouver did. The Canucks, they're in a different window right now. Makes a little bit more sense. So, and obviously, if you're Jake DeBrusk, if other teams had 3 and 4 year deals on the table, and here's an up-and-coming team like the Canucks putting 7 down, becomes a pretty easy decision for him and his camp, too.
Yeah, I had a separate chat with Jake DeBrusk on Saturday before the Rogers Legends of Hockey event, and I asked him some similar questions, and I can't remember exactly how he put it, and he sort of said it in a roundabout way, but when I asked him about the interest and the speculation surrounding Calgary, he kind of said, yeah, it wasn't something I ruled out at the beginning, but I was targeting something different than what they were offering. And again, I'm paraphrasing there, but what I heard Jake DeBrusk saying was they didn't come close in term to what I got in Vancouver, and so we never got too far in the talks. And, you know, the one thing he did put to me, he just said, you know, Vancouver came with an offer that made it pretty easy for me to not look elsewhere.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, do you like the player? Like, yeah, I'm a fan of Jake DeBrusk as a player. Everything I've heard is he seems like a guy who would be a good fit on a team, and yet if there's one place that the Flames, in my estimation, don't need to be adding right now, it's on the wings. If they have depth anywhere, it's on the wings. And so to go long-term with a winger before you figure out, okay, who fits where, you know, what's Hanzek, what's Pelche, where's Zeri play,
Coronado.
Where's Pospisil play, what sort of role is Coronado fit? What, you know, I mentioned Pelche, but what sort of role does he fit into? Until you answer a bunch of those questions, I just don't know that it makes sense to go long-term with a winger.
Yeah, agreed. And you take a look at the job the Flames did do in unrestricted free agency.
Yeah.
What? 2 1-year deals? 2 2-year deals?
Yeah, two-year deals for Lomberg and
Bean.
Jake Bean, and 1-year deals for Cooley and Anthony Mantha.
That, for where the Flames are, that's the type of deals they should be signing. No need
Couldn't
to be going long term.
Couldn't Flames, agree more.
Flames did not even come close to slapping a pair of handcuffs on them. They made these guys will help them in the time being. Maybe they'll become Lomberg, Mantha, Bean, Cooley. Who knows? Maybe one, two, multiple of these guys will be part of the future. Maybe they won't be, and it's only 1 or 2 years they're here.
Yeah.
But they are players that can help you for now, and they're not hurting you in the long term. None of these contracts are getting in the way, of what the Flames are trying to build.
I don't think they certainly were interested in DeBrusk. I don't think they were willing to go beyond 4 years, even in that discussion. And quite frankly, they might not have been willing to go beyond 3. I'm not sure on that.
Mm-hmm.
I am sure that they weren't willing to go longer than that with anyone else. Like, if they signed Jake DeBrusk to a 4-year, or if they tabled a 4-year offer to Jake DeBrusk, it was the longest term offer they had on the table this summer, at least to my knowledge.
He's Wes. My name is Pat. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Sham. Thanks to Connor, our producers as well. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo Smart Lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com.